Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
Mari McLean is an author and publisher and has helped countless people with her guides to sobriety. Her first book, The No Bullshit Guide to Getting Sober, was published in 2023 and became an Audible bestseller. Her follow-up from 2024 was titled The No Bullshit Guide to Staying Sober. Mari speaks with great honesty and candid humour, having endured some extremely tough years battling an addiction to alcohol and major personal setbacks. Our conversation on Take It From Us is just what you'd expect. Brutally honest, yet humble. Here is Mari McLean. Tell us about your use of language in your books, not only in the titles, which I've referenced in our introduction, but also within the book. Tell us about your use of language and why it's so powerful.
Yeah, well, I've always written for pleasure, but I've also written for a living, so I've got away with words. But the reason for the vernacular is because when we're talking to addicts, we're talking to rebels usually, so we want to relate. And it's also natural, it's a natural part of my language to use those words. And actually the research shows that people that swear are more honest than people that don't, so you've got a mask there.
Really?
Yeah, so you've got a mask. People, yeah, so if you're comfortable in your world just to throw out the odd expletive and express yourself and be completely you and authentic in communication, it actually builds trust. So obviously there's a setting. You wouldn't throw around the F word at a five-year-old's birthday party or at a board meeting. But if you, it's just honest.
There's no question that, that's correct. The No Bullshit Guide to Getting Sober, followed up by The No Bullshit Guide to Staying Sober.
Yep.
And they're pocket-sized. So are they beautifully designed to fit in a man's purse or a handbag and so we can take them around with us? Is that the idea?
Yeah. Well, most men I know don't have purses, but they've got back pockets in their jeans. So it's to slip in the back pocket of their jeans or in a chick's handbag. And the whole point is that they are discreet, right? Because if you're just on the verge of starting to address a problem and you're not sure if you're going to be able to do this or not, you don't necessarily want everybody else going, what are you reading? Why are you reading The No Bullshit Guide to Getting Sober, right? Because you don't want a million questions about that stuff. So that was the point. And, I mean, it was against the advice of commercial publishers who said that's really hard to see in a bookstore. It's too small. So, you know, they were like, you need to write a bigger book and it needs more filler. And I was like, I don't want to write a book with filler. I want to write a book that works for the people that need the help. And so I don't want a book that looks good on a shelf. I want a book that does its job. And they said, right. And I said, yeah, so I'll just publish it myself and then I'll get someone to distribute it and sell it. And they said, well, good luck with that. And so that's what I did. And the great folk at Bateman Books New Zealand said immediately on seeing this book, these books went, I want them, we want them, we can sell them, we can distribute them. It's okay, don't worry about that. The message is what New Zealand needs at the moment. And they were really, really, really good. So that's what I did. I published them myself so I could keep the format exactly how I want so that it's relevant to the people that it's for because, you know, I lost my brother to this disease and for me it's about results and it's not about it's sales results. It's about get the book, they read the book or they listen to the audio book and they conquer their addiction, right? So, yeah, and so I also made it an audio book because a lot of people with addiction problems have ADHD or they've got other learning disabilities higher than the rest of the population. But also we all take in information differently, right? So I'm audible. So I really like audio and I like the medium of radio. And so that's for me, that's my jam. But for other people, they need something they can actually hold, a book. And then one thing that I found really interesting was my assumption was e-books would be for the new generation, right, the millennials, because they're all digital. But actually that's not who's bought e-books. The e-books have been bought by the elderly, and that's because they can increase the font size so they can see them better, and it's got a reflowable text format so they can increase the size. So yeah, I just am so pleased we made that decision to do it in all formats, and that's been really good. And also the most that it's used is on Spotify Premium, so it's downloaded all over the world as a book, but also people listen per minute, so they might be making their kids dinner in London and listening instead of having a glass of wine, or they might be at the cricket in Johannesburg and they've got it in their earphones because they don't want to drink that day. And so the fact is all formats are important, and all means of getting the information, whether they sit down and read it in one hook or whether they take 7 minutes at a time because that's all they've got, it's about the message getting out there.
So you design it to be a constant companion and something that can be reread, going back to, and I know if I have a problem and I'm really trying hard, I've got this with me the whole time.
Yeah, totally. So it's like a little Bible for the rebel who's trying to give up their whatever. It works for crack. It works for anything because it's the same principle. So it's just like you've got a security blanket, you know. So you see kids running around with their little blankie and having a meltdown if they don't have it. It's just something that you've got with you that's got your back. That's the point with it being this size, is that you can carry it around with you and reference it whenever you're having a hard time. But you've also got, we've got a free guided meditation. You're not your urge. So you can get that on the website. And that's also really helpful for people. They download it to their phone. So even if they're not near wireless or data, which is unusual these days, but it does happen, then they've got it. So they can actually just listen, and then they can just go through that urge with that guided meditation in their ear. So yeah, we've got all the things we need, like, to help you. And also we will respond to any emails we get within 48 hours, but usually it's much quicker than that. So if you're really struggling and we get an email through, then we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. So people aren't alone. You know, you don't have to do this by yourself if you're struggling. And if you're brave enough to take that step, we'll take it with you.
Alice, a bit more about your story, your relationship with alcohol, and what drove your behaviour and what ultimately helped you.
Yeah, well, okay, so the book is dedicated to my brother Stu, and Stu lost his battle with alcoholism at 37, so he died in my arms at Auckland Hospital from an esophageal bleed, and that's a complication that comes from an enlarged liver and cirrhosis of the liver. So I've seen it kill young people, right? And I've had my own struggle with it. So first of all, it knocked off Stu, and then I had struggled with it on and off probably. I didn't realise in my 20s that wasn't normal, because most of us, I think, from Commonwealth countries grow up with pretty bad modelling around alcohol from society, right? It's just binge drink, and that's part of culture, and it's almost expected. So I just worked hard and played hard with my girlfriends all through my 20s, and that involved just working in the media full-time and then going out on the weekends and drinking loads of bubbles and taking ecstasy and having party drugs, and then coming down on a Tuesday at work, basically. And that just repeated through my 20s until I, what happened? I stopped working full-time for TVNZ, and I thought, oh, this would be easy. I'll just go out on my own and I'll start freelancing, so I'll do some styling. And so I did some styling for ACP Media, thinking, you know, this will be easy. I know lots of people, but, you know, invoices aren't paid or invoices are paid late, and I struggled with the administration financial aspect of it. And then when my money wasn't stable, then I wasn't stable. So yeah, I think those jobs I'd had previous had just masked a problem that was already quite definitely there. And so I ended up waking up one morning next to a boyfriend that I'd had at the time, and he said, "Mari, I think we need to get you to your family in China." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "I think I need to call your dad." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because you're catatonically depressed. Like, you don't want to get up. You want to do stuff. Like, we've got a problem here." And, yeah, and so that's what happened. He got me onto a plane and said, "That's it." And then my dad picked me up. And I remember it was SARS because I just descended into a mask, like a sea of white masks. And I remember just thinking, this is surreal. And I'd just previously been to the Rosalie Clinic in Remuera, and I had a great psychologist called Jock Matthews, and he'd said, "Mari, I'm not going to treat you until you stop taking party drugs, because I don't know what's your naturally occurring chemicals. I don't know what's your depression. I've talked with a psychiatrist. You need to really get it through your head that we don't know what we're dealing with your depression until you stop the party drugs and the drinking." And I couldn't. And so that was the first time I actually tried to stop drinking. I couldn't stop. And then I realized I've got a problem. So Tony Blom put me on a plane to Dad. Dad came across from Guangzhou into Hong Kong, picked me up. We got on a train, we went back to China, and then that was that. He just said, "There's no drinking going on here. We're going in to see the psychiatrist," and we did. And then he said, "Right, you need to take these antidepressants, no drinking until you get back to level chemicals." So I remember that being a pretty bleak time. That was a pretty bleak time. And so fast forward, I was living there with mum and dad, and I was getting more stable, and I started working for the Danish consulate, that's right. Yeah. And so when I was back into money and a work structure, things got quickly quite better. But I hadn't addressed the underlying issues. So what happened? So I think I was clean. I hadn't drunk for a year. And then I met my ex-husband. That's right. And then I don't know at what point, but we weren't married yet, but I picked up again. I didn't realise. I'd gotten better, but I didn't realise that the alcohol was fundamentally it was not good for me. So, yeah, I then started drinking again, and then I drank through that 10-year marriage. Yeah, so that's not really something I'm proud of, and I'm not proud of that Lars, when I met him, didn't drink very much at all, but by the time we'd split up, he was drinking a lot. So it just, yeah, it was not, it's not good. It wasn't a good situation. So, okay, so fast forward, 10 years later, I'm in Copenhagen with Lars, and I was realising, because I was drinking daily, and I was just getting earlier and earlier. So I was like, "Lars, should we meet down at the wine bar at the end of the street?" And, you know, at the beginning it would be like, oh, 6:30, then it was 5:30, then it was 4:30, and then it was like Lars going, "Well, why don't you just go there by yourself? Because you're not actually there to meet me. You just want to drink." So that was true. And, yeah, so that was not good. And then what happened then? I got invited to New Zealand Fashion Week. I'd had a relationship with Dame Pieta Stewart prior, which was, I did a market report for her in China about the readiness for Chinese brands for New Zealand fashion, and they weren't. They were still trying to buy aspirational stuff like Louis Vuitton and Gucci. And I remember I'd called her and said, "Will you mentor me if I do this Miramoda entry," which was which was the Māori Indigenous part of Fashion Week. And she said, I'd love to and I really want you to enter it. So that's right. So then she mentored and then I got selected to show my work on the catwalk. So it was a Māori Parisian collection because I had a French fashion designer friend and we went back and we showed that collection and it got a lot of good media press. And then a little under a month later, that's when Stu died. And then I didn't go back to Copenhagen. And then I drank really heavily. So, yeah. And then Lars was left in Copenhagen and went, look, I'm not going to come down. I'm staying here. And I said, well, I can't leave my family, so I'm staying here. But the drinking kind of got majorly out of control then. And at that point, I said, this is a problem. And I woke up again one morning, like 10 years later, catatonically depressed again, and went, I want to end my life. And very luckily, I don't know how this happened, but I decided to go to the marae on Waiheke, Piritahi Haora. Something said, just drive to the marae. Don't put the... Because I was in the process of hooking up the pipe to the exhaust and putting it in the car and just... I had enough. And it was clear, Isabel, just drive to the Haora. Just drive to the Haora. I remember saying, I don't even know if I've got gas to drive to the Haora. Just drive to the Haora. So I got in my car and I drove to the medical centre at the marae. And it just so happened that the day that I walked in there, a psychologist called Paula Joseph had come out to get his next client, and he saw me walk in the door. And I don't know to this day how he knew that I was thinking that, but he said, you just stay there. And then he came back out later and said, look, just stay here until the end of the day and we'll talk because I've got to see these clients, but there's always time to talk. And then, yeah, I went into his office after he'd seen all his other clients and he said, we need to, he just knew. He knew what I was going to do and he said, we need to, what are the complications? And I said, alcohol and, you know, I've lost my partner and my brother and my dad and I've got this financial pressure. And he said, right, we need to split them up into three. First of all, you need to get antabuse. You need to stop drinking. And so antabuse is a pill that if you drink on it, you get violently ill. So he said, we can't dose you on it today because you still have alcohol in your system, but have you got someone you can be with until we can dose you on it? And I did. I had my best friend, Jimbo. Yeah, I went to Jimbo's and just stayed there until I could get to powder again and then he put me to the nurse and she dosed me on the antabuse and then, thank God, and then he said, you can need to come here every Tuesday and every Thursday until I say you don't need to come here anymore and you need to, we need to make a plan for the stuff that's overwhelming you, this container of stuff from you and Lars and the marriage and yeah. And so we made a plan and I got some help with that. And just at that point where everything got into overwhelm, and everything turned black, I couldn't see a way out. You know, I couldn't see how I was gonna surmount that by myself. But yeah, I'm just so glad I've always had a connection to my Atua or my gods, and so I listened to them. And so when they said that, I didn't really question. I just went to the Haora, and the next thing happened, and the next thing happened. But you know, the problem wasn't solved at the level it was created. I thought myself into that problem. I drank myself into that problem. But the solution, long term solution to that, has been a spiritual solution. So yes, I could stop the drinking. Yes, I could do the talk therapy. Yes, I could resolve the financial stuff over time. But it's actually been helping other people with my problem that's provided me with long-term peace and maybe not drink again, because if my experience was good for something, then it's not shameful to me and it's not useless. It's actually got meaning and can help others. And, you know, so my books are not a long drunkologue and a sad memoir or blah, blah, blah. They are highly funny. They are guided towards the reader, helping and guiding the reader along the process of recovery. And, you know, that's what's made me well, is helping others. So, you know, that's
where... Right. Thanks for sharing that. Your problem has become your purpose in such a powerful way too. Are the books and the messaging, are they also designed for sort of grey area drinkers? People that, you know, they want to cut back but they may not have a major problem? Are they designed for people like that?
You just get the, like, so funny. Okay, first of all, if you don't have a problem, you're not going to pick up a book like this. You're just not. So this book is if you think you're on the verge of, is my drinking healthy or not? Okay, so the first chapter has the questions that help you determine whether your drinking is on the edge or not. It's all there. It doesn't matter what stage you're at of that journey of questioning how healthy your relationship with yourself is. The books will guide you. And yeah, it's not, I mean, for me, there is no harm reduction with addicts. It's,
well, the safe level is zero. We know that, don't we?
Safe level is zero if you've got the allele 1 gene, and the allele 1 gene's got less dopamine receptors. So if you've got that gene that's into reward and reinforcement, you don't have a choice. You, if you want to stay well, it's like a diabetic, right? A diabetic, in order to stay well, needs to watch their sugar and take the insulin, right? So it's the same for alcoholic. There's no shame in it. It's just your receptors in your brain work a different way. But then you need to really consider, okay, am I going to keep putting antifreeze, because that's what it is really, ethanol, into my system when my system finds it toxic and poisonous and it destroys my life? So you've got to kind of just go, right, am I an addict or an alcoholic, or am I just a binge drinker, right? So you need to just figure that out for yourself, and the book will tell you how to do that. It's got the things you need to be able to try and do. And if you can do those things, you don't have an alcohol problem, so it will help you with that. But I think the big thing too is after I wrote getting sober, I got all these emails going, now we've got sober, how do we stay sober? You know, so that was pretty funny, because it's getting sober. You can stop drinking, but to stay stopped, that's the tricky bit. That's the tricky bit, is that recommitment to yourself to stay stopped. And then if you stayed stopped, then you don't want to be a dry drunk. So you don't want to be someone who's sitting on their hands every time the top shelf's opened at the sale GP or at whatever event you're going to. So
when you're getting antsy.
Yeah, when you're getting antsy. So you don't want to be sitting.
So that's the term you use. Did you come up with that, dry drunk?
No, that's a term in the industry for when you have stopped, you've taken the booze away, but you haven't looked at all the reasons that you drank to start with. So dry drunks are usually angry, irritable, restless, discontent. It's everything. You know, so they haven't found their peace. So, you know, you've got to do the deep dive. So that's what happens. So the staying sober starts the process of the deep dive. And then there's some people that need it more prescriptive, right? Because a lot of alcoholics are creative, and a lot of creative people aren't good at in building structure. And so then they ask for these, the journal, which is like it just makes it into a question and answer kind of type format where they can review what they've been reading and That is really funny because, yeah, so first we did them with paper and then we had all the eco warriors and digital princesses going, well, I can't print it out, I'll hurt the planet. So then they needed PDF fill-inable version. So we've done it all in all versions. And, yeah, no, it's really cool. It's really cool when I see the light bulb moments, when I see people realise the triggers that create the drinking to start with unhealthily. When you see people realise and have the breakthroughs, and often, like, for example, one common time that you see alcoholics have breakthroughs or anyone with addiction is when they realise that they've suffered emotional neglect. You know, so if they weren't emotionally tended to as kids and they've had to fill that hole themselves or haven't been able to, you know, you can see the light bulb going on when they realise, no wonder, you know, no wonder I've looked for a panacea or something outside myself. I didn't get the emotional safety and security I needed at all as a
child. And can I ask, Mari, have you figured out kind of when that time normally happens for people? Like, how long have they been away from alcohol before these light bulb moments come in?
Okay, so the first thing is you're never going to have these light bulb moments if you don't stop the drinking. That's number one, okay? So I've not seen anyone successfully work on their triggers while they're still drinking. So number one, to even get to the starting blocks of being a really happy, peaceful person, you need to put down whatever you're using to mask your problem. Then your problem can start to bubble up. And then when it starts to bubble up, instead of squashing it down so that it comes back fighting harder next time, the triggers, you know, you get triggered, right? So you need to acknowledge it and just go, a feeling has never killed anybody. Like, it's this is bloody uncomfortable. I do not like this rage. I was taught to be a nice girl and not get angry. All of that out the window. You're going to feel. That's the whole part of it. You have to feel to heal. So once you've started to feel, and that comes up like a volcano, right, because most of us are pretty good Kiwis, you know, anyone with that stiff upper lip background, the Commonwealth countries from the British, we have really learned to squash down all those feelings, right, growing up, of not being enough or not having our emotional needs met. Oh, just get on with it. Oh, it's, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But no, that stuff's going to come up for healing, right? So first of all, let it, okay? So it's been pushed down so deep that, you know, you think you've done a great job at hiding it, but it's just like a dormant volcano. With the right trigger at the right time, it's going to erupt in a fucking, you know, yeah, in a like cascade of feelings. So first of all, allow yourself the space to feel. Be angry. Be whatever you are. Just don't squash your feelings. That's the second thing. Then once those feelings have come up in a mad explosion, then you get down to looking at, well, what the hell caused that reaction? Where did that come from? Right. And so then you're starting to do the work. But I would say in terms of time frame, your first year is just about not picking up. Okay. So you're going to have those emotions start to come through big time the first year. The deep dive, you don't get to do, you won't be able to do the deep dive because you'll be having so many feelings come up until the second and third year. You know, so, but it's a long-term game. Like, it's short-term pain for massive long-term benefit. And you won't realise how good your life can get until you're willing to put that short-term effort in, go through it. But, you know, yeah, it's worth it. It's worth it. That's the main message, is you are worth it. Your life is worth it. And you don't know at the moment there's going to be a corresponding up for how you're feeling. So that's the way nature works. There's a corresponding up for every down. So if you don't keep putting your foot in front of the other, you're not going to get necessarily through to that, right? So you just got to bite the bullet and do it. You know, that's the main thing.
Thank you so much for your time, Mari, and thank you for sharing your story and your wisdom with us.
Yeah. So just don't give up. If you've, the main thing is, yeah, you might have tried before and you might have gone to social services and social services might not have, it might have failed you, or whoever you talk to about your issue might have failed you, whatever. You just got to keep going. Like, you can't let anyone else determine your own value and your own healing. So just, if you walk the path and keep putting one foot in front of the other, the path will unfold as you walk it. You don't need to know all the answers. Just go and commit to yourself. You're going to get clean and the rest will come.
Take It From Us is produced by Karen Murphy, and I am your host, Kent Johns. Please get in touch with us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Take It From Us. My story, your story, our story. Your language, your interests, your community on planetaudio.org.nz.
E mohio ana koe ki te kōrero Māori. Taringa is a bilingual program produced by Te Wānanga o Aotearoa, exploring a range of concepts in English and Te Reo Māori. You can hear Taringa on 104.6 Planet FM every Friday at 3:50pm. And to catch up on more episodes or to find out more about the program, visit Te Wānanga o Aotearoa website, twoa.ac.nz, and search Taringa. Mea ko tahi tātou. Let's learn together.
Our Earth has existed for 45 million centuries, but this one is special. Ours has the planet's future in its hands.
Technology, entertainment, design, and much more. TED Talks brings you inspiring presentations from speakers across the world. Hear activists, experts, and thought leaders sharing their ideas and stories. Wednesdays at 10 past 2pm, only live and only on Planet FM.
Whenever I want to join any community, they always welcome to me.
The people of Auckland are very, very friendly.
I just love our community.
And that makes you feel you're living with your kith and kin.
It's such a mix of people. It's very vibrant and interesting.
Every community is living very peacefully and friendly.
planetaudio.org.nz. Loving Auckland, our diversity.
Take It From Us brings you real stories from real people, sharing their experiences of mental distress and journeys to recovery. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30pm right here on 104.6 Planet FM, or catch the latest episodes at planetaudio.org.nz/takeitfromus. It's a half hour of commercial-free music coming up next now here on Planet FM, taking us through to Samlyn Khmer with news, music and updates from Cambodia on air at 2:10.